Talk. I am your host, Phil Perkett. This is a monthly podcast brought to you by The Network, where we bring internal and external experts who share career advice, expert career advice, and untapping into your potential, making you great, making you powerful in this journey of professionalism. So for this episode, we want to share four keys to a phenomenal career. It aligns well with our theme, The Network Pillars in 2022, talking about executive presence, career management, and strategic thinking. Our guest is an expert in this area, and we are honored to introduce to some and present to others, Marion E. Brooks. He is the Vice President and Head of Diversity and Equity and Inclusion at Novartis Pharmaceutical. Yes, he is also an internationally certified executive coach and a best-selling author of What You Don't Know Is Hurting You, Four Keys to a Phenomenal Career. Marion has been recognized as one of the top 100 HR professionals in the world. He has successfully built and led award-winning teams in sales, marketing, training, development, and DE&I, including a sales team that generated over $1 billion in annual sales. Wow. Actually, he leads an award-winning DE&I team dedicated to helping incorporate into the DNA of the Novartis culture and society with innovative programs and initiatives. Marion dedicates his free time to charitable causes and serves as the chairman of the board for Sunshine's Open Door Foundation. More to come on that in a moment, which actually prepares and fosters children to successfully transition from the foster care system to independence. Marion, it's an honor to have you here today.
Phil, thank you. And it's an honor to be here.
Now, you know, Marion, you know, we got about 30 minutes. So I really want to get right into it for this career, Real Career Talk episode. We do want to dive into the four essential keys that can enhance our career success. However, I want to go, you know, on the personal side real quick here. I understand that you have your biological daughter and your three nieces that you have raised. Talk to our audience about how that's impacted your life.
Well, when people ask me what's my greatest accomplishment, I say being the father of those four girls, because there's no greater accomplishment. Watching them grow from little girls into the women that they are today is, you know, it's nothing that you can be more proud of. And actually, I think that seed was planted in me from my grandmother, because my grandmother and my grandfather stepped in to raise my brother, my sister, and myself. So I think I'm just continuing to pay it forward, exactly what I received.
Okay, good. And I think it's I saw an article where it said grandmother Sunshine, right? Yes. Sunshine Open. Talk to me just a little real quick here about that. Sunshine, where did that word come from, if you don't mind?
Well, actually, that was her birth name. So her grandmother was Native American. So her birth name was Sunshine, and she later added Elizabeth to the front of it. So that's where the name comes from. So, and she represents everything that sunshine gives you. It gives you strength, energy, hope, growth, all of those things. My grandmother encompassed all of those. And I wouldn't be the man that I am today if she had not been the woman that she was.
You know what? You better talk about your roots, man. You better go and talk to us about those roots today. All right. So real quick here, twofold question. Number one, how does it feel to be the author of a best-selling book? And then talk to us about what was the pivotal moment that really impacted you up here to write this book, What You Don't Know Is Hurting You, Four Keys to a Phenomenal Career.
So I've always been invested in other people. And what I find the most pleasure in is ensuring that I'm a part of helping people go from point A to point B. Knowing that I played a role in that has always been very important to me. So at a point in my career, I was doing very well. I was making more money than I could ever have imagined. But I was waking up every morning and I was doing what I called a salmon flop. I throw myself out of the bed like a dead salmon, get up, go to the restroom, and then go to get dressed and go to work. And I knew there was something more in this world for me to do. So I started on this journey of exploring what is my actual purpose. And I was in my 40s at the time when I actually started to really lean into this. And then Oprah Winfrey had this session that she was traveling around the country in 2015, and it was the Life You Want Tour. And what she was doing and other gurus that were with her was helping people to find their purpose. And one of the exercises that she had us to do was she wanted us to write our life out in full color with no limitations. And what I added was, if money didn't matter and failure wasn't an option, what would I be doing? And so I wrote that I would be a coach. I would spend my time full time working on helping other people be the best versions of themselves. I would be a best-selling author. I talked about where I would live. I lived near the beach and all that. I'm in Los Angeles now living. And at the end of the 2.5 days with Oprah, she said, now go do one thing on that list that leads you towards that version of yourself. And I went and Googled how to become an executive coach. Mm-hmm. And because I'd had an amazing executive coach earlier in my career. And so I Googled how to do it. And then I spent the next 2 years being certified. I spent my nights, my weekends, and my vacation time actually getting my certification as an executive coach. During that process, after the first year, if you accumulate a number of hours, they want you to start coaching people. And I was coaching a young lady who was an executive at a large media company in New York. And we worked together for 6 months. And when we started working together, she had received a new boss and she felt the boss was trying to get rid of her. And, you know, the boss was much younger than her. And she had been coveting these two promotions for years, but had always been overlooked. During the 6 months that we worked together, she got both of the promotions and the bad boss got fired. Now, I had nothing to do with the boss getting fired, but I just helped her navigate the system. And that's what the outcome was. And at the end of our time together, she said, if you really want to help people, you have to write a book, because I didn't know what I didn't know. And it was hurting you, hurting me. And that became the title of my book, What You Don't Know Is Hurting You.
Mm-hmm. That's phenomenal. Actually, when you think about being able to navigate through our careers, we all have ups and downs, and really we talk about overcoming, and we talk about, you know, staying ahead of the game, and we talk about all of these things, that these nice little fads. But you, now in your book, though, you talked about the four P's. Now, are these, would you say these are the four essential keys to enhancing my success or the audience's success? We're talking about performance, perception, positioning, and persistence. Tell the audience a little bit about the four P's. And let me ask you one more thing too. Was it irony? Was it just a matter of coincidence that all four of these words began with P? Talk to us about that for a bit.
So that comes from my marketing background. So you want to make sure things are easy for people to remember. But the four P's are the things that I've identified in my own career, as well as the people I coach, as well as people that I have led, that either accelerate or derail your career at some point. Whether it's a new job or a challenging situation or a challenging boss, it always falls into, when I'm coaching someone, when I'm supporting someone, or I'm going through something, it falls into one of these four categories. And so that's why I bucketed the information in that format. But the Harvard Business Review says that only 5% of people in any industry, it doesn't matter what industry you're in, are considered high potentials. And high potentials get access to information, training, and support that the other 95% of people don't receive. Now, if you're a woman or a person of color, it's about 1% or 2% that get access to that information. And I was lucky enough to be one of those people. So this book was my opportunity to pull the veil back and share with everyone what only a chosen few usually get, and adding on my experience as a coach as well as a leader. And so that was the impetus of the book and why I positioned it that way, with the performance, perceptions, positioning, and persistence, to make sure that people could actually pick up the book. And not, you don't have to read the whole book, but if you're going through one of the challenges, you go to that section and you have a blueprint. Actually, when I launched the book, I had the pleasure of having one of the chief officers from Microsoft write the foreword. And she said, if I had had this earlier in my career, I would have moved much faster through the levels of that organization.
You know what, Marian, let's take each one of them real quick. And I'm going to say a sentence that I saw or heard you doing in an article. And I want you to comment on it. In regards to performance, you said people will never reach full potential until they understand themselves and their impact on other people. Can you elaborate on that real quick?
Yes, it's the crust, it's emotional intelligence. 80% of our success, all the research shows for years and years, come from emotional intelligence. Only 20% is based on IQ. And think of it this way. There are a lot of smart people out there, but not a lot of emotionally intelligent people out there. And it's a muscle. You can increase and grow your emotional intelligence. It was a journey for me to gain the level of emotional intelligence that I have right now. But emotional intelligence, my definition, is the ability to manage yourself and your environment more effectively to get better outcomes. So emotional intelligence is the absolute key to business as well as personal relationships. If you have it, you will run circles around other people. If you don't, you will always run into roadblocks and blame other people for the situation. That's one of the key things to think about. If you're saying, does this person have emotional intelligence or not? It's the ability to really identify the situation and then identify your part. What part did you play? Not the other people. So one of the things I always tell people is an easy exercise to help increase your emotional intelligence is at the end of the day, the end of the week, to pause and think about a scenario or a situation that didn't go well. It could have been in your work performance or it could have been a situation in your personal life. And then think about what the ideal outcome would have looked like if you could have framed it. And then think of one thing that you could have done differently, not that someone else could have done differently. And what that does is it actually stores in the repository in your brain another option the next time you're in that situation or a similar situation. The lack of emotional intelligence is this is how I am. This is who I am. If this person hadn't done this, I wouldn't have done that. That you're never going to win that way. But being able to think and play chess versus checkers is the key for emotional intelligence.
I love your statement here, and you're challenging our audience to take a moment. Time management tells us, Kenneth Ziegler, he tells us at the end of the day, sit back and reflect on. And it's really a transparent, really, you have to, don't do it haphazardly. You really have to think through what worked, what didn't, to your point. And I appreciate you sharing with our audience to look in the mirror first and not just what other folk didn't do. You know, what did you do and not do? Where were opportunities for you? Let's go to perception. I'm going to give you another one. You said how we show up, our appearance influences how people judge our authority, intelligence, and suitability for increased responsibility.
Yes. So again, there's a lot of research that actually shows the way that you are perceived. In the first 7 seconds of seeing you, someone gauges you as valuable, not valuable, competent, or incompetent. Within the first 7 seconds, that's human nature. And then you have maybe 3 to 7 seconds to actually confirm or to change their opinion. Mm-hmm. And if you show up and you are disheveled, so let's say for this interview, if I showed up and I had on a shirt that it looks like I just mowed the yard, right? And I was disheveled, I was sweating, and I was all over the place. And I was talking about career development instantly, people would have discredited me. So you can either start with a halo or at a deficit when you are going to engage with people. And it's human nature. People judge us on our appearance. So why not put your best foot forward? Why not show up and look excellent? And then you have to follow that up with content. Now, you can't just show up and have this amazing package, but no substance. Having the substance is the entry into the conversation. But the way you look, the way you show up, the way you actually present yourself, the confidence that you exude, all of those things have a significant impact on how people receive you.
Mm-hmm. Having the substance gets you in the room. These nuggets are powerful. You landed on this, Marion. Having the substance gets you in the room. However, how you show up can impact. Now, I used to teach presentations and I used to tell students 90 seconds, but you're telling me it takes 7 seconds for them to start to formulate. It's not cemented.
Not cemented.
Starting, and that's very important.
Yes. And then you can actually dig yourself out of a situation. But why dig when you could actually start at the top?
You better talk. I'm loving that. I'm sorry. I'm having fun with this. I knew it was going to be a good day. All right. Yeah, this is a great point. So positioning determines where we stand with regard to competing brands. Could you talk to me more about that?
Yes. So 90% of the decisions that are made about us and our careers are made when we are not in the room. All of us. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to have someone in that room speaking for you. And it has to go beyond just your boss. So you have to make sure that you understand how to network effectively. And when I say network, I always have someone in the audience say, well, you know, I'm not really good at networking. Or I don't like to network. And I say, well, how's that working for you? Because no matter how good you are, if no one knows you and no one's speaking for you, you're going to have some challenges. Like, who gets hired? You're not in the room when those decisions are made. Your bonus, right? If there are layoffs, who's going to be cut? You're not in those rooms, in those conversations. So how do you build a network effectively? You start with mentors, and then how do you change mentors into being sponsors? And the key thing that you own in that process is first you have to get clear on who you are and where you're trying to go. So what are the roles, long-term and short-term, you determine what that is, that you seek to aspire to. And then what are the current strengths that you have, 3 to 4 strengths, and 1 or 2 areas of opportunity that you are working on that will prepare you, and don't miss this part, for success on day one in those new roles. And when you actually meet someone and you say, hey, I met you at this event or I saw you at this event speaking, I'd love to learn more about your career journey and all of these things. Would you mind giving me 15 minutes on your calendar for me to learn more about you and your career progression? And then you bring your developmental plan and you ask for feedback, not for someone to give you a job. And when you do that, it gives you an opportunity to really engage people around you. They feel that you are serious about it and they may agree or they may not, but you get different perspectives on the plan that you are executing. And that's the important part, executing. I'll give you a great example. Back when I was in sales, I had the desire to move into marketing because my undergraduate degree was in marketing. My MBA is in management. And I was like, it's really tough for salespeople to transition into marketing at that time within the pharmaceutical industry. So I was at an event. I knew the head of marketing for the company was going to be there, and I was prepared. I had my elevator pitch. I had finished number one in the nation as a sales manager, and I wanted to get into marketing. So I saw him go to the buffet line. I went to the buffet line behind him, and I introduced myself and just told him, you know, this is who I am. Very interested in learning more about your journey. I know you're from sales and I have a desire to move into marketing. And don't miss this part. Would you mind giving me 15 minutes on your calendar so I can learn more about your journey? Mm-hmm. He actually ended up becoming the biggest sponsor that I've ever had in my career.
Mm. Wow. So you also, I want to add one other point about networking. This is phenomenal that you're saying. Getting access to them, we're going to get into persistence last. However, I want to go back to networking real quick here. Another key element that you spoke on about networking and understanding obtaining a mentor. There's a difference between a mentor and a sponsor, which goes back to, you know, oftentimes your quote about 90% of the time your career is impacted by people in another room that you don't have access to. But talk to me about when you're in that networking moment. We've heard other officials talk to this, that it isn't always about what you can obtain, but also what you can give. Can you share real quickly about that?
Yes, absolutely. So what I always recommend for people when you get that audience is that you go with a plan. You have an agenda of what you want to discuss. And then as you are seeking information, also offer something. even if it's that, you know, I'm really good at this, or I know your team is working on X, Y, and Z, so you have to do some research. I would be open to, I would love to mentor someone on your team, or if you have a special project that you would like for me to participate in. So offer something. A lot of the times they will say no, but it lets them know that you're not just there to take. And you have to network like a connector and not like a parasite.
Wow. Network like a connector and not a parasite. I love that. So let's go to that last one. Persistence, sacrificing immediate gratification for long-term success. Talk more about that.
Absolutely. So persistence, no matter how good you are, no matter how emotionally intelligent, no matter how amazing your brand is, no matter how connected you are, you're going to run into obstacles. And the difference between exceptional lives and careers and average lives and careers is the ability to identify opportunities in the obstacle versus just focusing on the obstacle, because what you focus on grows. So something happens and you're, oh, woe is me, your head is down, this happened to me, and then you're telling everybody, yes, this is what they did to me. Guess what? It gets bigger and bigger, and the problem is, oh, yeah, I can't believe that happened to you, versus someone saying, this happened. Okay, now what's the opportunity here for me or for me to help someone else in the future? And when you focus on opportunities, guess what? Ideas start to come. And it's the I use the analogy of something happening and you put your head down because you're complaining and you're in sorrow and you're looking for sympathy. But opportunities are going past you, but your head's down. Lift your head up and say, what can I learn from this? And then how can I apply it now in the future? And you will be surprised at how fast solutions start to come to you and opportunities start to come to you.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to emotional intelligence. And you mentioned that there's a lot of smart folks in the room, but not necessarily emotionally intelligent folks. So what was a key contributor for you that helped you from an emotional intelligence point of view?
So I think it was really understanding how important it is, but also understanding where my deficiencies were. So I encourage everyone, if you have not ever done an emotional intelligence test to understand where you fit in the four quadrants, you are doing yourself a disservice. Mm. You are doing yourself a disservice. So you need to understand where you fit into the four quadrants. And then if you are strong in one, because no one is typically strong in all four. So let's just say that off the top. It's rare that someone is off the charts in all four of the quadrants of emotional intelligence. But what you do is if you can identify where your opportunities are, then you can actually work on it. And that was me. One of my opportunities was I was self-aware, but the self-management part was like, well, if they did this and they did that, I'm a smart guy. This is the answer. I would drag everyone to the finish line because I needed to make sure we got things done. Versus mm-hmm. stepping back and understanding, okay, I see this situation, but what are the other options to bring people along? Or maybe that message doesn't need to come from me because of the sensitivity that in this relationship, and maybe I need to leverage the network. That's leveraging the emotional intelligence. And so it's absolutely critical. And once I've learned about it, I leaned into it. So as I was going through my certification to become an executive coach, is where I leaned in. And so now with all of my coaching clients, the first thing we do is an EQ test. And let me tell you, Phil, every mm-hmm. time there's a challenge or whatever they're going through, it goes back to starting with emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How you're landing and how your awareness of how you're landing. This is excellent nuggets. And I want to quickly, talking about the four P's that you mentioned earlier, I want to focus on perception and positioning as it relates to what we're dealing with today with remote workers. How does perceptions and positioning, or how has it been impacted with this whole new phenomenon of remote working?
Okay, so I'll start with perceptions, and I like to use examples. So we were working on a huge event, and we needed a vendor that was going to participate that we were bringing on. And my team was in charge of identifying the vendor. And so I went to a couple of different vendors and I wanted to make sure that we brought in some diversity. So we had three diverse vendors and I selected one and I was like, this is the one. And so I went to the other two VPs that we had to align on the budget for and said, I'm going to have this team come in and present to you, but this is the team that I think we want to go with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The lady that they sent was not the one that I had been working with. I'd been working with the president. She sent someone else, which was okay, to actually do the presentation. But she showed up as looking like she was going to wash laundry.
Oh, my.
Okay. In the middle of the presentation, her microwave or something goes off and she's like, well, give me a second. And she goes and gets food. Now, mind you, she's talking to three executives. And one of them texts me and is like, wow. That's all he said was, wow.
I bet.
I was so embarrassed. I was like, okay. So needless to say, they didn't get the contract.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They had the content, but I was like, if they showed up that way to present to us, how are they going to show up when they are speaking to 15,000 people in our organization? So no matter what, remote, I think is still critically important to show up as a professional, right? Get up, get yourself organized, put on something appropriate for you. You don't have to have a collared shirt on every day, but make sure it's appropriate for the environment that you're going in. You should not look like you just rolled out of bed because that tells people that the meeting or whatever you're engaged in wasn't that important to you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So think about that. Now, when we talk about the positioning component, I think the remote aspect has helped a bit. I'm able to coach and mentor a lot more people than I was before, right? Mm-hmm. When people reach out to me, I can give people 20 minutes in between meetings and things of that sort that I wasn't able to do before. The other thing is that I think now that we're having more remote opportunities, even like this, people are seeing more people. And it's very easy at the end of a program or a session, and I've done this my entire career, I identify the people I want to follow up with. I actually have nuggets from what they were talking about, and I send them a message, and I reference what they said, and then I talk to them about, you know, the information that I would like to learn from their journey.
Mm-hmm. I've only been turned down one time.
Mm-hmm. I've only been turned down one time because the person had too many mentees, and they referred me to someone else. Who actually became an amazing mentor for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So I think making sure that you understand that your packaging and your branding, regardless if it's remote or live, matters, as well as ensuring that you take advantage of the opportunities that are put before you. And remote, I think, has actually opened up more doors and more opportunities for mentoring.
Technology has definitely made the world a lot smaller. That's
yes.
True. Exactly. And we should take advantage of every opportunity with this technology in a good way.
Absolutely. In a good way. In the positive way. Yes.
Well, Marion, I want to tell you it's been phenomenal. And I'm going to throw something at you. I'm going to throw a hook at you real quick.
Okay.
Your grandmother, because, you know, she seems to be a phenomenal woman. As we wrap up, I'm interested in your last thoughts. And I want you to put it in this context. Going back to your grandmother. She actually said to you, there are no limits on anything you want to be. The only limits are the ones that you accept. Finish our session today and share with the network what your mom, your grandmother meant by that.
So there was a situation that happened. As I told you, my grandparents stepped in to raise my brother and my sister and me. And I was about 6 or 7 years old. And there was a family event. And I was walking through and someone said, whose boy is that? And they mentioned my parents' name and my parents' names. And the person said, oh, that boy doesn't have a chance. He's not going to be anything. And I'm a little kid and I hear this and I started crying. I went to the back room and I was crying. And my grandmother came through for some reason. And she was like, what's wrong with you? And I told her what I heard. And that's when she told me, she's like, baby, let me tell you. People will put their limits on you. The only limits that you have, the limitations you have are the ones that you accept. I was born as a Black woman in 1915 and I went to college. You have no limitations. Mm. And I remember that for the rest of my life. And that's the way I operate. When people say, oh, it's impossible. Like I was the first African-American man to be a head of marketing at Novartis. The first time I talked to a mentor about it and I told him that I wanted to be coming, he said, well, what do you ultimately want to do? I said, I want to be a head of marketing. He said, I can help you get into marketing, but it's going to be hard for you to become a head of marketing because of two things. Number one, you're from sales. And number two, you're African-American. And neither are considered strategic. That's what he said to me. Luckily, I had been working on my emotional intelligence. But he wasn't trying to hurt me. He was giving me the reality of the situation and the environment. So I took that as a challenge and I said, okay. And he said, and I started telling him all the things that I've done and that I'm doing that are strategic. And he said, Marion, I know you're strategic. You're preaching to the choir. You have to add it to your brand. And I went and I made sure that I added strategic to my brand. And now if you ask anyone at Novartis about me, strategic is going to be one of the top three things they say about me.
I want you to know, Marion, this has been quite phenomenal. I really wish that we could take more time and peel back your ears, peel back that brain of yours and see what else is in there and your grandma. I mean, it's been phenomenal. I really thank you. I believe the audience will definitely, the network audience will really benefit from our session that we've learned today. Remember, go out there. The potential is unlimited. And the only restrictions are the one that you are accepting as truth, as what Marion has shown with us today. I thank you. Thank you so much, Marion, for being with us today. And we'll see everyone at the next Real Career Talk session. Have a great day. Stay powerful.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you.